When they opened the door, a squad waited to accompany them. The professor told Ty to get back to the communications shack. Half the squad went with him. With the others, he went outside to look at the weather. Outside, a cold, wet wind scoured the ground. Margue stayed close to the professor, looking up only once to see that no stars showed.
I can't tell. Bob, go on and rig Zed to cover the planes. We'll start dismantling the other stuff.
Professor, we can't find Vinet or several others. I want you all back inside until we find him.
That could take days. Some of the labs are underground, connected by tunnels.
Ty's at the communication shack. He has guards.
Down the runway, one of the planes was blazing, the flames shooting up to glow on the underside of the clouds.
Great. They can spot that right through the cloud cover. Get inside, now!
Where's Lieutenant Lightfoot?
I don't know. He's not answering the comm.
Another brighter flare of light painted one side of the Major's face. The second plane.
Ensign, switch your PPU mask to enhanced, and get those civilians back under cover. That yellow jacket makes a perfect target.
Margue fumbled for the mask controls, and instead of dark clouds and the distant fire, she was looking at a scene painted in shades of amber and orange. She could see little orange figures moving around, some with green triangles for heads. The blazing fire looked black. As her eyes adjusted, she noticed that the professor had a green triangle, and so did the NEMs around them. Then, a turquoise line stabbed across her vision to crawl up the professor's sleeve toward his head. Margue threw herself at him, hooked a leg behind his, and they fell together as a shot smacked into the armor of the NEM on the other side. He staggered, then all of the NEMs dropped as one.
Target acquired! Mark hostile!
Margue turned her head and saw that one orange figure now had a red square on top. The distant figure went down. She lifted her head, and the NEM shoved it back down.
Not yet, Ensign. May not be dead and maybe others.
Casualties?
No, sir. Small arms fire only. Didn't penetrate armor. Civilians all unharmed.
Who's on high guard?
Tarak and Bennett's report.
No activity on the roof, sir.
Let's get him inside.
The NEMs formed a double row of armor, and the civilians crawled carefully between them into the building. But no more shots were fired. Margue took a last look through her enhanced mask, and the orange figure still lay where it had fallen. Then a network of turquoise lines appeared, coming from several angles to converge on the antenna cover of the communications building. She leaned out to see, and a NEM yanked her back.
Are you trying to get killed?
No, I just...
Get inside! Stay inside! Take care of your professor!
Margue followed the others into the windowless break room. The professor was looking at her in a way that made her uncomfortable.
What are they doing?
I think they're trying to destroy the antenna array. It's under that dome in the communications building, isn't it?
Yes, and if they succeed, we're not going to be able to use a tight beam, even if we construct one.
Why a tight beam?
Goes farther, carries more data. We might even be able to reach the system Ansible if we can get a fix on it. That would get word out.
But... wouldn't a regular broadcast disperse more widely, giving you more chance to warn any incoming ships that wasn't part of the mutiny?
You mean, like old-fashioned broadcasting?
Yes, if you have enough power.
And the antenna is much easier to make. You may have saved more than just my life, Ensign.
The RSS Vigor came through the jump point in textbook fashion. Just because they knew they were coming into a secure system, just because nothing could possibly be wrong, was no reason to be careless. Captain Satir would not have paid attention if anyone had complained, and no one did. Satir was a good captain, and his fussy adherence to every little jot and tittle of the rules had saved lives before. Now, Vigor slowed to scan the system defenses and monitor system message traffic before proceeding in system, even as her beacon automatically informed the system who she was. As she dumped velocity, the communications officer stripped one message after another, hardly glancing at them as they came off the printer. Captain Satir demanded hard copy, even if that did mean plenty of recycling. He handed them to the captain's runner, who took them to Satir. Satir was already alert, peering at the system scan.
I've been to Copper Mountain 8 times, and the outer loop's never been all red.
I've been here 10 times and never seen this many big ships in system. What's going on?
We're 10 minutes out, 20 delay on queries.
I don't think I want to talk to the station. Put us at battle stations, Tony, but don't light up the weapons.
Colored lights danced across the various control boards reporting systems in operation. Satir glanced at the sheets of paper in his lap. Trouble. Major trouble.
Sir, there's an odd signal coming in. You need to see it now.
Odd how?
Not the usual frequencies, for one thing. It's surface-propagated, but not a coherent signal. It's like they didn't care who picked it up. It'd dissipate the noise within this system, though.
And it says?
It's in clear, and it says there's a mutiny at Copper Mountain. That the mutineers have the orbital station in control of system defenses. It's begging somebody to get the word out.
Captain Satir looked at his bridge officers. If this was a hoax, reacting as if it were real could end his career. If it was not a hoax, he had only one chance to get away. Even as he hesitated, a bank of lights on the scan desks came alight.
They're aiming at us, tracking us.
Full ahead. Find us a slot and take us to jump. We're getting out of here while we can.
Vigor had the speed and the angle. None of the ships in system could catch them in straight flight, and he was prepared to jump blind if necessary to put more distance between them.
Make extra copies of all scan data and try a squirt at the system Ansible as we go by. They may have reprogrammed it, but it's worth a try.
4 days later, Vigor came in range of an Ansible in another system and transmitted an emergency override command set, followed by the entire load of scan data she'd collected. Oh. The long room, with its high ceiling, would have held 20 pairs of fencers, and had before. The walls were pale green above the mirrors, and the gilt, beaded molding around the ceiling was echoed by the molding around the mirrors. The east wall, a bank of French windows, let in the natural daylight and overlooked a rose garden. Down the middle of the polished parquet floor ran the strip, deep green. Miranda finished her stretches and picked up her practice foil. Facing the mirrors, she could see that Pater, though still stretching, was watching her. She moved through the parries, smoothly but not fast, feeling for the rhythm that would best suit her needs. He finished his stretches, but made no move to pick up his own blade. He stood watching her instead. She met his eyes in the mirror, then turned.
What? Am I doing something wrong?
No, my dear. I was thinking how lovely you are, and how incongruous it is always to see a beautiful woman holding a deadly weapon.
Miranda touched the button, bending the blade with only a little pressure.
This? Even if it weren't so whippy, it could hardly kill anyone.
It's the principle of the thing, and I've seen you with stiffer blades.
I was younger then.
You were ladies' champion in épée. I have never forgotten your grace that day.
I was lucky. Berenice ran out of breath. I've always suspected she had a cold. Usually she beat me.
But still, if you had live steel in hand in the old days, I don't doubt you'd have been a formidable opponent.
I'll take that as a compliment. Shall we?
I was going to ask for a favor.
A favor? What?
I see you have Bunny's old collection here, in the hall. I know he never let anyone actually use it, but... do you suppose we could?
Bait and hook, taken faster than she'd expected.
The old weapons. But, Pater, they're old. I don't even know how old, some of them.
If I could just hold them, just, you know, feel them.
I don't even know if they're really mine to lend. I mean, they're here because Bunny brought them along, but they are his family's heirlooms. You're the one who said I should be fair to Harless.
Harless need never know. It's just the oldest steel I've ever held was that antique Gregory has, you know.
That old thing. It's not a day over 200, whatever he says. These are much older.
I know, that's why I asked. Please.
Pater cocked his head and put his hands together like a polite child.
I suppose it couldn't hurt, if we're careful.
Miranda could feel her heart speed up, safely hidden under her white jacket, as she led the way back to the hall. She unlocked the case and stood back. Pater reached past her and took out, as she'd expected, the big saber with a heavy ornamented hilt. He ran his thumb down the blade.
Bunny said they were still usable, but he didn't want to take a chance on breakage. They're not replaceable.
Pater breathed on the blade, then buffed it with his sleeve.
No. Derrigue work. Look at that pattern. And the ring.
Pater set the blade back and took down another.
You have no idea their age.
Bunny always said that one, the épée, was the oldest, and the rapier the next oldest. He said it was just possible those two were from old Earth, from an era when they might have been used.
Pater put the rapier back and took the broad, curved blade for which she had no name.
Amazing. And this?
I don't know. It looks more like a chopper to me, for very large potatoes.
Not a blade for artistry, no. An executioner's weapon, perhaps, from a very bloody period.
His hand reached again, this time for a foil.
So, this is your weight now?
His hand stroked the blade, bent it.
Not so whippy as the one you were using, but light enough, I'll warrant.
She had to be fair. She had to be scrupulously fair, and let his own folly put him in danger.
Oh, probably. I still practice with heavier blades now and then.
Let's fence with these, not the modern ones.
I don't think it's a good idea. I don't know what they would think.
They? What they? Who could possibly dispute with you now that the judgment has gone your way? What harm could it cause?
I don't know. What if a blade breaks? What if Harless appeals and then finds out I've destroyed a valuable asset?
He needn't know. He isn't a fencer. He's probably never paid attention to them. Besides, I'll explain it was all my idea.
Pater nodded at the helms.
Look, let's do it right. Use all the old gear, masks as well. It would be like fancy dress.
He had always liked fancy dress. He had worn it to balls where other men wore conventional clothes.
But...
just this once. There's no one to see. Please.
Again, that tip of the head, the pleading expression. Then an impish grin.
I'll bet you've always wanted to, haven't you?
As a matter of fact, I did sneak that one out once. There's something about it. Knowing it's old, knowing it was used by people long dead.
Yes, I thought so. Just as you enjoy old porcelain or jewelry. Those who appreciate such things should not be forbidden the use of them. So you will humor me this once, Miranda?
Miranda glanced around as if nervous of watchers.
I suppose. And after all, if we do break one and Harless finds out... as you said, he's no fencer. He can hardly skewer me.
Well, my lady, choose your weapon.
Pater set the blade he'd been holding back in the rack and waved her forward with an extravagant gesture. Miranda reached, pulled back as if unsure, and finally took the blade he had just replaced, the longest of the foils, with a weighted hilt to balance it. He took its partner.
Let's complete the mischief. As I said, with such blades as these, our helms too should match. I've long fancied myself in one of these. Had my armorer make a replica, but it's not the same.
He tried on one, then another, until he found one that fit. Miranda raised her brows at him.
It can't be safe, Pater. Blades last, but old metal screening...
It will stand up to a blunted stroke. And if I cannot defend my face, at least I'm not much of a fighter. Come, my dear. If you're nervous, you must wear your usual mask, but permit me my conceit. The only way you will strike my eye is with your beauty.
That comment was all that Miranda needed to erode the last grain of sympathy she felt. She could have shot him where he stood, but she was not going to trial for the murder of a murderer.